Chapter 3. Elucidation and Trepidation. Mayor Gray was sitting with his back to the window, facing the door as Chief Rether came in. The look on the mayor's face was that of discomfort and desperation, while the look on the chief's face was of displeasure and annoyance. Gray wasn't sure how to start the conversation. In the silence, Rether occupied his attention with a painting on the wall.
"It's from early in Fedori's career. Very hard to come by anymore. I'm thinking of selling it at an auction. The city could use every little bit of help right now. Perhaps an auction of rare art, such as this from my personal collection and from various storages around the island, could help the city as a whole raise money for changing over to more sustainable technologies."
Chief Rether was a little bit surprised to hear this plan from the mayor.
"Of course,"
Gray continued.
"It's probably too little too late.
Why did you call me here?"
His diction may have hinted at frustration, but his voice sounded genuinely curious, if a bit timid, for a man of his stature and experience.
"The people have now realized the influx of visitors. Seeing as how tourism isn't our forte, they automatically assume it's fishermen and trappers. They aren't exactly wrong, you see."
But with the short span of time that travel is available each year, a surge of fishermen and trappers come to the island each year. The only problem is that everyone tries to get their fill while they can. This in turn leads to frequent overfishing and overhunting in the region. The local fauna haven't been able to fully recover each year, and as such, are slowly dwindling with each passing season of travel. But those that live on the island year-round are able to observe the effects of such irresponsible behavior, as they partially rely on local resources for survival. Out of this issue, protests have formed, and now organize around each travel season to thwart incomers. The conundrum the mayor now faces is that the city relies on both the visitors for trade and the residents, which, by extension, includes the environment. Regulations on fishing are difficult to implement without denying some visitors, so it has only been laxed in the limitations presented. Many protesters call for stricter limitations, while some call for outright bans.
"You're worried they'll demonstrate again?"
Chief asked this, yet he already knew they would.
"I'm just worried about when they demonstrate."
He repositioned himself.
"I know about the current situation with the case, and..."
"You want me to give up manpower to deal with this? If we don't act at full strength, and quickly, protests are going to be the least of your problems."
"Why must I bear the blame for actions outside my control, just because I am mayor at the time of their occurrences?"
Gray thought to himself. Realizing what he felt he needed to do, he replied as he sought fit.
"I take no pleasure in doing this, but you know that while the force answers to you, you answer to me. And if that isn't going to work with you, we can cut out the middle man."
Rether knew exactly the strain that was put on both of them. Both men were torn between two objectives, and neither wanted to acknowledge the real threat the protests could have on the economy of Cimeterium.
"I'll divide my forces, but it will be by me. And I'll manage both issues."
"Thank you."
"Not for you, though I thought that was obvious."
"In any event, I know of your recent recruits. Maybe they can ease the burden of having to split your people up."
"I guess I'm lucky to have landed some accomplished support."
Kasumi was standing outside an abandoned garage. It was one of the rumored locations of the gambling ring. All of the previous locations were also abandoned buildings, though only a few were investigated, as they all turned out to be fully empty on investigation. Even Detective Blound, with his Nen tracking Hatsu, couldn't find anything in most of the locations, which means that no aura had been present in those places for at least 12 hours. Due to the shortage in staff, not all the locations have been investigated. On this night, she was feeling a bit whimsical, and with nothing else to do to pass the time until the chief returned from his meeting and Gorik arrived at the station, Kasumi felt she might as well be productive. Tingles ran down her spine, signaling to her the potential danger in doing what she was about to do. But being the intrinsically curious person she is, Kasumi hoped to find someone daring enough to stand against her. She slowly crept towards the building, not out of carefulness, but so as not to alert anyone inside of her approach. Circling around the side, she looked in through the windows and examined each doorway. Unfortunately, there were too many for her to keep track of alone. With all the information gathered from her survey of the structure, Kasumi began designing a plan of entrance. Meanwhile, while she was outside carefully taking precautions to perform at her best, a man inside was just waking up from a sleep. He looked around, dazed, as he had been asleep for a while.
Those bastards left me. Again.
He struggled himself to a stand.
How long was I out for?
He guessed it must have been a few days. Such was the cost of his hatsu. With acute hearing, he heard Kasumi's footsteps reverberate through the ground. Panic ensued in the otherwise calm man. While she planned a way in without being detected, he planned a way out. Since he figured she might be hanging around outside, he made his way towards an exit opposite the side of the building she was at. He waited by a door, moving to keep opposite her. The two both opened their doors at the same time, both making sure to make them close as quietly as possible. Once inside, Kasumi began searching. It was too dark to see much, but she didn't want to turn on a light and alert anyone. There was one thing she noticed. A smell. There was an aromatic insult wafting about. A combination of sweat and smoke still lingered. People had been in here, and recently. She scanned each room, feeling about. Without sight, she was able to feel the warmth from where the man had been laying. She realized he had been in the room today, not more than an hour or so ago. She gambled, in what was assuredly a gambling den, and flipped the switch. With the lights on, she could see clearly that she was alone. Kasumi began rummaging through random piles of junk littered about for anything concrete. Outside, the man was now in full sprint, running away from the building. He ran past a bar and was looking back in the direction of the garage he awoke in when he bumped into a muscular woman, still a little bit tipsy from her time in the bar. She turned around.
You!
Shit!
The man and woman recognized each other from a few nights ago. The woman had been drinking at her favorite bar, which was nearby. After a long night of drinking, she said goodbye to a friend who left for home so that he had enough time to sleep before work the next day. Starting off the opposite direction from him, she wandered in that way drunk people seem to do that makes it seem as though they're pantomiming an earthquake. Obviously, she wasn't too drunk to walk, but drunk enough not to walk straight. In her stupor, she thought it a good idea to enter a gambling house she found. She expected slots and pachinko, and got them in spades. What she also found were opportunities to gamble on other activities, ones not normal in a casino. She admired their ingenuity in such an industry. However, by the end of the night, her admiration died, and from its corpse sprouted a vine of seething disdain, much in the way spores and fungi birth from the corpses of cordyceps-infected insects. While sitting at a slot, losing yet again, a man came and put his palm on her shoulder. After losing so much, it was apparent to him that she would not end her night peaceably. Looking up at his face, she'd remember it, even though she was inebriated. Anger consuming her, she tried to lash out, not with fists, but with nen. To her surprise, and fueling more disdain, she discovered she could not. It wasn't long before another dragged her out onto the sidewalk and tossed her away. Defeated, she lied there before eventually wandering home, only to return to the bar later and noticing the building was now abandoned where the gambling site once was. But tonight, after drinking a bit, yet again, this time not encouraged by the company of a friend, she ran into someone she could now call an enemy.
I just have to get close and get my palm on her. Then I can surely defeat her in a situation without Nin, despite her strengthened appearance.
The man planned to himself. He ran up while she positioned for defense. His plan was to bait a punch and then slap her arm, triggering his hatsu, which he would then use his remaining 5 minutes to move behind her with his superior speed and attack her neck or head. If that didn't work, then he would apply his hatsu and run. He'd have 5 minutes to escape and hide. Though since she couldn't chase him effectively in her condition, he felt as though he'd only need 2 minutes.
That's not going to work again.
She thought to herself as he ran up with open palms. She may not have been smart, but she wasn't stupid either. He was within reach and crouched below her, feinting a direct attack to bait her counter so he could sidestep using the strength of his legs and his crouched position, and then attack her defenseless arm. Crouched below, he motioned as if to attack her stomach, and she countered before he could hit with a wide punch. The man moved beneath it and prepared to strike, when a wave of what felt like air collided with his body and sent him flying back.
The punch missed,
he shouted.
Yet I was still hit.
The woman charged after him without speaking. She made an arching motion with her other arm to punch him straight down into the ground. He was quick enough to dodge it, but he was still slammed down, incapacitating him. After the commotion, she called the police. Kasumi, in the building, had found some cash lying around and was piecing things together. She ceased what she was doing when she noticed police cars driving down the street. She followed them to the scene. The woman tossed the man to Detective Blound and said,
"Tell Reether we're even now."
"When do you want to give your statement?"
"Tomorrow, when I'm sober."
Blound smirked to himself.
"I guess the bar witnesses will have to do for now."
Approaching the scene, Kasumi asked Blound,
"Who's that?"
"Old friend of Chief's."
The two watched as she made for the edge of town. The muscular woman liked to take long walks in nature when she was drunk. It helped her to sober up.
"Come on, Kasumi. Chief should be heading to the station. We had someone pick up Gorik at the docks, so they should be about there too."
"Good, because I have some ideas on the case."
"So you get any crazy cases, you don't air?"
"Nah, not really. When it comes to the show, we pick them carefully."
"What is the craziest case you've done outside of the show?"
"Hopefully not this one."
"Well, I think you'll see that we're all pretty capable at the station. There's just not much of us. Chief's got a good hold on the city, though, even without many on the force. Plus, with you and that woman, we should be able to handle anything the city throws at us."
"Let's hope so."
"I gotta say, you and Kasumi are probably big fish in a small pond here, so we appreciate you two answering our call. I mean, Ms. Matsumoto's taken down a whole mercenary group before."
"That's so?"
Gorik's attention was seized at its peak.
"Yeah, and I've watched your show for a while, even since before I was a cop."
"Oh, don't go tell me you joined because of me now."
"Ha, maybe I did."
"Well, I hope I don't let you down."
"Mr. Huntsman, it's been an honor just to be able to meet you, let alone work with you. I wouldn't worry about a thing."
Worry. That was a word that stuck in Gorik's mind. The young officer didn't seem to be worried about what they were dealing with. Maybe Gorik's experience was different than the officer's own, but a little bit of worry was the way to survive and succeed on the force. The key to solving cases and to not becoming another case to solve yourself. He hoped that the young officer's lack of worry would reflect the level of danger on this case. Or maybe this would be the first time the Cimeterium police would need to worry, seeing as how their history was a peaceful one, low on crime till now.
"Well, looks like we're just about there. No matter how wild it gets in this place, the station always is a haven. I love when it comes into view. It's like coming out of the wilderness to civilization again."
The young officer was inexperienced at best, but it would not reflect his skill. Gorik only hoped that when push came to shove, he'd be able to act. Whisk and Shinaga had already made it to the forest due to Shinaga's ability to transform, increasing his speed. The two had worked together to corner a beast by a cliffside, and with Whisk's conjured sword, slashed at its legs. Afterwards, Whisk swung the sword down onto the beast, making the sword break.
"All right, Shen. Looks like we have dinner,"
Whisk said, as he pulled out a small knife and buried the blade into the beast's neck, killing it near instantly. As he wrestled the beast down, his sword unable to kill it due to his resolve, he calmed and caressed the beast as an apology for killing it. It was with sorrow that Whisk killed it, and Shen lay quietly down as a sign of respect and thanks for being provided sustenance. The two kept close for warmth, till Whisk managed to finish building the fire out of the twigs that both of them gathered. Whisk started cooking the beast in a crude fashion over the fire. They decided to camp up near the cliffside to prevent the chance of ambush and accidental attacks by other beasts in the forest. The ocean breeze was cool, but Shen's warmth made up for it, along with the fire. Whisk admired the comfort of the location. As a vagabond, he eventually preferred to sleep outdoors, partially because of his dislike for large crowds, but also out of habit. Out of recent locations they slept at, this would be the most comfortable in a while, he thought. Shen seemed to agree with the way he snuggled against Whisk. Not 2 miles away was Candy, who had made her way from the shore to the forest, was sparing no time to get a taste of one of Cowtip's famously delicious beasts. Candy was able to make it here so quickly through the use of a hatsu of hers. By the name of Step by Step, a leg increases strength with each step. When used with both legs, the effects only last half the time, but she can gain considerable speed and jump height. She needed to use this ability in order to get to the forest before sundown so she could survey the area and find a target. Luckily, she found a morsel before the sun began setting, which meant she could save some Nen instead of having to waste so much aura scanning for prey with Gyo. Even though she was miles from home, immersing herself amongst the trees and stalking a beast was as close to a home as a house could ever be to her. Brandishing a chef's knife, she made a move. Within a second, the beast was dead. It didn't feel a thing. Respect should always be paid to living things, even when you are killing them, she was taught. In the act, Candy made sure to avoid damaging the body too much. Partially as a matter of avoiding desecration, but also to avoid damaging the major meat centers on the carcass. Before she prepared the body, she dragged it up a tree to avoid predators. Until she could fully study or receive proper info on the forest, she didn't want to use her catch as bait for a predator. She would need to know what kind of predators lurked around and if they were even worth hunting first. Her next objective was to create a fire to cook the meat. She set off a couple of steps away to start gathering wood before needing to move the carcass. Peering between the trees, she noticed smoke. The smell was quite vague and the color was already black, meaning the fire must have been burning for a little while. She decided to move the carcass closer so as not to lose it, then investigate. After it was moved, she wondered if it would be best to confront the maker of the fire. She could steal it and save time, or she could join them. It would ultimately depend on the person there. It could save a lot of time and lumber to confront them. As an expert cook, she smelled the cooking meat.
You can tell a lot by how people prepare their foods,
she muttered to herself. If she could avoid a fight, it might be best. However, it could be a whole new adventure for her if she confronted the person. Preparing for a fight without trying to alert the person, nor provoke them with the sight of a weapon, she kept it hidden, but within reach, in case a fight did break out at first sight. Skulking up to the site, the air was cool and breezy, but the heat from the fire was reaching far, even to her, faintly.
You want some food?
She stopped.
I already know you're there. Shen noticed a while ago, and we were wondering if you'd join us.
She strolled up to the edge of their makeshift circle. Whisk was biting at a slab of meat while Shen was gnawing away at his own piece, the majority of the small beast they captured.
You know,
she paused.
You can do some simple things to make it taste a lot better.
Is that so?
Whisk stopped chewing briefly and looked at the meat.
I'm not picky, but if someone says they got a better way, I'll always listen.
Candy proceeded to share with Whisk good pairings of local herbs with the meat and ways to prepare it that would allow the flavors to mature naturally together.
I've actually got more meat than I can eat in one night, and to be honest, this works better if you cook it this way.
She was mashing some herbs and spices together to make a rub for the meat. An easy glance at the meat revealed how unevenly cooked Whisk and Shanaga's meal was.
What are your names? Mine's Candy, by the way.
I'm Whisk and that's Shin. He doesn't talk, you know, because he's a dog. Still, he'll say please and thanks if you've got good food.
Candy walked over to pet Shen, who was laying down.
Careful now. He feeds off of men. The closest person that's pet him before will be the donor.
Candy pet him anyways.
You could have let me pet him. You didn't have to warn me.
I'm just looking out for you.
Shen helped Candy carry the carcass over to the fire, while Whisk tossed some more wood on the fire, including the twigs that Candy found, and a few logs they stored up in a pile that Whisk cut from a tree with his conjured sword. Candy cut the meat so precisely that Whisk almost felt embarrassed over his swordplay. Almost. Whisk didn't have time for things like embarrassment. He just didn't care, even if someone younger than him was more talented.
I'm glad I ran into some decent people out here. I wasn't sure what to expect.
Whisk smiled.
Thank you for referring to Shen as a person, too.
Xaxa had eventually made his way to the forest after a long walk without any assistance. He was in no rush. Life wasn't going anywhere. He'd get there eventually anyways, and the forest would be there, full of beasts, regardless of when he showed up. Even with the population dwindled in comparison to the even livelier times of yesteryear. His methodology was different from most people's. Using bundles of herbs gathered from around the area, Xaxa rubbed his body down with them, masking his scent with the scent of the food of prey. He moved carefully and nigh invisibly in the dark of the canopy-hidden forest. Moving close to the ground, an untrained eye would not detect movement in his manner, much like a sonar cannot distinguish aircraft from land when flying so low. Eventually, He positioned himself in the path another beast was walking in. When the beast came near enough, he lunged at it, mouth first, ripping through its throat with his teeth, paying no mind to the hair and tendons now stuck between his teeth. The warm muscles felt good against his battle-hardened gums. He chewed it, fur and all, as the beast bled to death beside him. He ate a third of the body before he felt like his hunger had been quenched. The rest he'd save for breakfast, eating it on the onset of rot. Breakfast is supposed to be the largest meal of the day, so he planned to have more to eat for then. Standing back up on his two legs, Xaxa began dragging the corpse of his prey behind him, searching for a place to sleep, preferably up in a tree. A peculiar smell entered his nostrils. Spice, smoke, wet wood. Sounds started entering his ears after his focus slipped from his food. Giggles, chatting, crackling. The taste was leaving his mouth. Saliva was washing the raw flesh down. Attention was piqued, and now his feet began to move.
Perhaps I can exercise my skills as a conversationalist tonight, after all.
Back at the fire, the two were enjoying their delicately prepared feast, filling their bellies as they relaxed in the soothing weather, slipping closer and closer to sleep. Whisk was content with food and a place to sleep, but he hadn't yet forgotten the joys of warmth and a place to rest with food in his belly. Despite his dislike of large crowds, he still enjoyed sharing times like this with others. Candy experienced few joys more titillating than someone enjoying food she prepared. A good laugh and a good sleep would set the both of them off for a proper day of rested minds and bodies. Shinaga perked his ears. Raising his head alerted Whisk as well.
There's another person.
Candy went back to defense. She kept the knife near in her hand, ready to strike out at the darkness. The sounds of light footsteps and a wet slump being dragged over dirt, now with the bloodied fur turned to a muddy hide, as the sliding sound of fur on dirt came closer. The fire's light illuminated the man as he dropped the remainders behind him. Xaxa stepped forth.
Now this seems like quite the impressive little makeshift domicile. Fond of nature, are we? Me too.
He smiled after noticing Whisk, Shinaga, and Candy all staring at him with potential murder in their eyes.
Thing about nature is...
Xaxa stretched his arms out.
You've got to be careful of predators.
On the bus, Lahara was sitting near the front, watching where they were going. She could not wait for the bumpy ride to end. Dahlia was near the back, trying to stay out of sight. The bus was pulling up to the Grand Hotel as it passed the station a few minutes ago. At the hotel, Lahara exited first and headed straight in to reserve a room. Immediately afterwards, she went to investigate it.
Might be the only 4-star hotel in the city,
she thought aloud.
Not bad.
Dahlia was still in the lobby, trying to get acquainted with the city world. She had no plans for what to eat. She registered a room, but didn't feel like going to it yet. Dahlia wasn't tired, she just was too shy to make any bold decisions right now. With no luggage, she wasn't in any rush to her room, either. Lahara came down the elevator to the lobby.
Good thing there's a restaurant across the street. According to the travel guide, it is 4 stars as well.
Happiness welled over her.
This city seems to know me well.
Both Lahara and Dahlia only imagined what might have happened with them if they'd walked. Earlier in the day, Maxwell was placing flyers up as he went through the village. They read as such.
Hire me, your friendly neighborhood electrician. We'll work for anyone. We'll do anything. Please? P.S. Electricity is a bonus.
It was his only hope, as right now his job search on the island was not giving off a very welcoming impression. Curiously, he looked about him. Being almost near the city, it surprised him to find out that he had lost sight of Virgil and Anya. They must have gotten lost, or so he thought. Maxwell noticed up ahead as people began amassing with the purpose of protesting. A wall of organisms would soon turn to a sea. In preparation for this, squad cars, at the request of Mayor Gray and by command of Chief Rether, would be arriving at around sundown. After taking so much time putting flyers up and saving the rest for cemeterium, Maxwell stopped at a trailside food cart for some lunch. As he was ordering a local favorite of fried fish on flatbread covered in mashed beans, passengers from the ferry were starting to come up through the village and had caught up to him. The dish was portable, as it was meant as a takeout sort of hand food. With a spicy cream sauce on top, as was Maxwell's choice, he paid for the meal, luckily on the cheap, and turned around to scope out the ferrygoers who also passed up on the bus.
Man, for a village of workers, there sure doesn't seem like much to do.
Cern made sure his voice was loud enough for most of the other passengers near him to hear. Reluctantly, Maxwell managed to agree with him. So he walked alongside Cern while eating his meal. He was far enough away that Cern paid no mind, but close enough for Maxwell to feel Zero's presence behind Cern.
I came here for something to do. If I was just going to wind up bored, I could have saved some money and stayed home.
Is it a playmate you're looking for?
Zero finally made his move. Cern turned around.
Ah, so the shadow finally speaks.
Ah, so the loud mouth takes notice.
Maxwell continued ahead a little bit, but turned to watch. As far as goals are concerned, Cern was looking to cure his boredom.
What makes you worth the time?
But he wasn't going to rush into a fight with someone he didn't know anything about yet either. Zero, on the other hand, wanted to learn as much as possible before acting.
In the interest of not becoming both your shadow and your echo, I won't repeat your question back to you.
Well, I've lost interest. I do see some promise in you, though. If I'm bored tomorrow, I'll be waiting near the center of the city. A bar nearest the center, anyways. If I'm bored, I'll be there, looking for something to kill some time. If you want to be that something, and you'll be there too.
Cern moved on, matching paces.
So you're heading to the city too?
Maxwell, at this point, just wanted some conversation to pass time while he headed to the city.
What's your deal?
Time was not something Cern wasted.
I'm looking for a job. Pass!
Leaving Maxwell behind, who was slowing in pace. Turning to face Zero.
How about you?
Seeing this as an opportunity to converse with someone new.
I'll be your company.
Great. So what are you here for?
Zero looked at Maxwell, who was enjoying his lunch.
There's something I'm trying to learn.
He thought back to the sight of Gorik entering a police car to be taken to the city.
And there's someone interesting in the city who I wouldn't mind running into again.
It's not that guy up there, is it?
I said interesting.
He glanced up at Cern. It was undeniable that Cern intrigued him, but Gorik held power, and someone with a position of relative power may know something or know someone else who does.
My name's Maxwell, by the way.
Zero.
Zero what? I don't get it.
I mean, that's my...
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry.
He took another bite.
Damn.
He said to himself quietly. Along a detour from the main path, Virgil was testing Anya to see how far she'd follow him. Her goal was to reach the city, but the sight of his man-catcher taunted her. Virgil turned to face her, some of the protesters not more than a few long strides away.
Why are you this determined to ruin all my fun?
I'd like to see something.
What's that?
I'd like to see you drop to your knees in fear, honestly.
Anya had no precedent for dealing with someone like Virgil. She risked the direct approach.
What was that now?
Virgil readjusted his man-catcher, keeping an eye on just who the closest person was other than Anya.
All I want is to cause a little havoc. Is that so bad?
Anya thought about it.
No, I don't think so.
Ha! Then what do you say about lending me a hand? If you want to see me at my worst, wouldn't it be best to stick by me?
She always wanted to try working for a criminal. Working with Virgil seemed to guarantee this.
I like the sound of that. Just one thing.
What now?
Prove to me that you're worth following.
She didn't want to waste time on someone who wasn't powerful enough for the fear to mean anything to her.
Looks like I get to have some fun, after all.
Ah, did you have fun while I was gone?
Kasumi handed some money over to Chief Rether.
Found this at the abandoned spot.
You also managed to flush out one of their lackeys, it seems.
He put the money into an evidence bag.
First day, and you're already doing good work.
Detective Blound was just finishing up processing the perpetrator from earlier. A squad car pulled in. Gorik and the young officer stepped out and made their way to the station.
Officer Lamino.
Blound was making sure to relay the information as soon as possible.
Detective Blound?
Chief says you're needed at the edge of town to help with the protests. There's only so much we can do tonight, so he'd rather have our manpower divided more evenly to deal with both situations.
The chief had sent three officers there already. With Lamino, that would make a majority of the force. However, with the outside help, four people would still be on the gambling case for the night, despite only Chief Rether and Detective Blound staying at the station. This way, an equal amount of people would be dealing with each issue.
It was nice meeting you, kid.
Likewise, Gorik.
Lamino left while Gorik walked to Detective Blound.
So you're the famous Gorik Huntsman? Nice to have you on board.
Blound reached out to shake Gorik's hand.
Happy to help.
He obliged the greeting. Blound and Gorik entered the next room to meet with Kasumi and Rether.
Ah, so you finally made it.
Chief stepped over to greet Gorik.
And this is Ms. Matsumoto.
You can call me Kasumi.
She shook Gorik's hand. After shaking her hand,
Lamino tells me you're quite accomplished, Miss Matsumoto. I mean, Kasumi.
Well, I don't exactly have a show, but I have done a few things.
I'd say so. I'm impressed, to say the least.
Yes, we're all impressed.
Detective Blound interrupted.
Now back to the case. I don't think Chief called you here to compare past cases and swap talk.
Right.
Kasumi changed gears.
So I know that not all of the past locations have been checked yet, but as we learned from tonight, they probably should be, even if only one of them holds any info.
Yeah, with low staff numbers and low combat experience across the board, it was hard to keep up with every new location.
Chief Rether almost felt embarrassed.
And there's only one way we'll get these guys.
Gorik continued off of Kasumi while postulating out loud,
We're going to have to catch them as they set up.
Kasumi nodded in agreement. Chief agreed, non-verbally. Blound looked up at the rest of them.
It makes sense.
Blound was thinking on past actions with the case.
Every time we try and catch them, right when we hear of the gambling site, they're gone when we get there. Tracking their Nen with my ability usually just leads us in circles around the city for 24 hours.
But why was this the first time someone was there when we investigated?
Rether was surprised about this as well.
Beginner's luck?
Joked Kasumi.
The guy's been processed, right?
The gears were in motion in Gorik's mind.
Sooner or later, we're going to have to interrogate the guy. How about sooner?
Bertha's going to give her statement tomorrow, so we might as well get the information we can out of him now and not waste any more time,
added the chief. Quietly, Kasumi questioned.
Bertha?
Blound leaned in to answer in kind.
The buff lady who took the guy down.
Kasumi nodded understandingly.
Now that I'm here, I'd like to take a look at all the files on the case so far.
Gorik wanted to be brought up to speed.
Sure thing.
The chief immediately began looking for the files.
Do we split up and check old locations, or do we wait until we interrogate the guy? Also, when we check the old locations, should we do it individually to cover more ground, or do we go in pairs for safety? Where should we start?
Blound was facilitating the planning progress with this line of questioning. These questions would need to be answered before actions could be taken.
Whatever we do, I'm glad you're all here,
Chief interjected.
Hopefully with you all, we can get a hold of this city before anyone gets hurt.
Bertha, the muscular woman, was strolling through the woods near the bottom of the mountain range, outside of the village nearest the point. As she was sobering up, she realized that she was quite far out from the city. Almost no one walks out this far. The residents of the city seldom find any reason to leave Cimeterium on a given day, and the villagers often feared traveling the wilderness at night for fear of predatory magical beasts. Bertha had only been out this far once or twice before. No beasts had come into contact with her. They must have been resting for the night. Or maybe they were hiding. After another bout of steps, she felt a small bit of N. A man walked out into the clearing she was still walking through. He spoke.
Have you come for me?
What?
Bertha sunk into a defensive position.
Are you going to fight me?
Huh, why not?
Are you going to kill me?
Maybe. Have you ever killed?
I have.
Then yes, I gladly kill a killer.
Gladly?
He raised his arms out to his sides. Bertha felt uneasy. Using Gyo, she could see that he was hiding his aura with Ean, but definitely was doing something with his Nen.
Gladly kill. How dare you?
The man rushed towards her before finishing speaking. Bertha sidestepped and swung her fist, emitting aura as well. The man was too quick and dodged the punch. When the aura wave following the punch came at him, he dodged it too, and then without connecting his fist with her, he hit her with Nen. It was like a fist had twisted upon impact. She lifted off the ground a few feet, where the man grabbed a leg of hers and threw her at the ground. As she landed, a cracking noise was heard from her back. From the air, the man came down and landed on her leg. Gnarled and mashed, her leg became a dangling mess of flesh, difficult to discern that there was even bone still in it. She writhed and yelled, but managed to hobble up and through another attack, an uppercut. The Nen attack following her punch this time kicked dirt up into the air. The man circled around her and knocked her forward. Before she could hit the ground, he punched her in the back, sending her flying forward into a tree, where he blasted his Nen at her and the tree, knocking it down and sending her tumbling.
Oh God, how long will it be before anyone discovers my body?
She thought. The life slipped from her body. The last bit of air in her lungs was exhaled. Her bowels began their final process. Before she came to a stop from such a build-up of momentum, he had made his way to cut her off, and with a swoop of Nen, tossed her back out into the opening, where he ran to meet where she'd land at. As her body came down into his reach, he performed a wide kick, arcing horizontally, connecting with her side. She was bisected diagonally across her stomach. Both sides landed on the ground, her upper half face down. The height of the fall and the force with which her body hit the ground had slightly broken one of her limp corpse's arms. The man glanced over towards the city.
I hope I disguise my Nen well enough.
He examined the body on the ground in two places.
Hopefully no one will come here again.
So, what should we do next?
Whatever we do, we're gonna need some help first.
Got anyone in mind?
Maybe, but we should scope out the newcomers first. They may have what we need.
What about that strong lady we saw outside the bar a bit ago?
She's strong, but just not strong enough. Strength isn't what we need, not her kind.
So you want to go through the city and see who's coming in, then?
It may be all we can do, right now.
The two began their walk for the edge of Cemeterium, wondering just how lucky they might be. A young man had just finished his walk through the village and made his way past the protesters. With his first view of the inside of Cemeterium, he declared,
It's time I show this city